This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collett. Welcome to The First Time.
Writing New South Wales offers a range of online courses, giving you the opportunity to learn from established authors, including Anwen Crawford, Tegan Bennett-Daylight, Ryan O'Neill, Fiona Wright, and many more. The online courses are open to everyone, allowing you to network with writers from across Australia and receive both tutor and peer feedback. You can learn from anywhere with an internet connection, whether at home or away, and develop your skills at your own pace. To book a spot or find out more, head to the Writing New South Wales website, writingnsw.org.au.
Okay, Kate. Let's start again. Are you ready, Kate?
I'm ready.
Okay, we're going to talk about puff quotes.
Puff quotes. What is this thing? Let's explain this for our listeners. What is puff quotes?
Universally called?
Well,
puff quotes.
I think they are, but I've been talking to some non-bookish people, and they just think the whole concept. What is a puff quote? What is that? Tell us what it is.
So the puff quote is the endorsements on the front of the book, usually by other authors. Or would you count the review type? Herald Sun says,
yeah,
this.
Definitely.
This
I think they use them
as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they call them something different in the US because I had this very confusing conversation with my editor about blurbs and something else. Anyway,
puff quotes.
Who did yours for Skylarking? How did they come about?
So definitely the publisher asked for Skylarking, and I had the glorious Olga Lorenzo and Lucy Trelaw and Emily Bitto did mine.
Oh my God.
And they were delightful.
Dripping with puff quotes.
I do know that a very established, delightful writer of historical fiction was asked, but she wasn't able to.
Hannah Kent?
Don't say!
Was that her?
It was her.
Oh,
which is absolutely fine,
your
Hannah.
Book.
Because I think.
Hated it, Kate.
What I know now,
cut that out. Cut that out, baby.
What I know now is that people can have policies too.
People can have
policies on it because they like get asked all the time.
Yeah, so. Okay. It was actually interesting, complete side topic. You know how I was saying I was in the car with Natasha Lester?
Yeah.
And a couple of other writers.
Yep. Running in cars with Catherine Collette. Yeah.
New show. So much, honestly, year highlight. It was a really good car trip. But she was saying, we were talking about book clubs, and she was saying, hate book clubs, has it on her website, not doing book clubs. Whereas I've just seen a spate of people. Lee Kaufman is like, if you've got a book club.
Yeah, I did one.
Within
you know how
yeah,
we talked yeah, about them?
Did
I did one
well.
And it was really nice. I pushed your book and I told them that maybe you would go and visit them. They were
goodness.
Really nice and they had great cake. And anyway.
Back to puff quotes.
Back to puff quotes. Who did yours?
Tony Jordan did mine.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, lovely. Really lovely. She was very
did
sweet.
Did you have to ask? Seeing,
no, text asked.
Yeah.
They did everything, which feels like a much nicer way for things to sort of
it
be
really
organized.
Does.
She was great. Okay, so have you done puff quotes for someone else?
I haven't as yet.
Haven't you?
No.
I thought you had.
No, I have not done puff quotes. I have been asked.
It's a very shrieky me.
No, I have been asked. Once I've declined. Once.
Yeah.
Which was a time and, yeah, really a time issue for me that I wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, okay.
Which I feel really shoddy about. But guys, ask me. Like, I'm here.
Yeah.
I love reading books.
Yeah. It's pretty flattering
I'll
to
your
be
books.
Asked, isn't it?
It's totally flattering to us. And you know what? That tells me, like, my name on a cover doesn't actually sell a book because that's the idea of a puff quote, right? So you have to have your name on the cover as the person giving the puff should sell. Help to sell the book.
Well, does it for you? Do you like, would you buy a book?
Yes, absolutely. All the time. I look at who's puffed it.
Yeah.
And oh, I mean, I don't always look at who's puffed it, but if there's someone that I really like and I don't know
it
the author, then I'm like,
over.
Okay, yeah, if they think they're awesome, then brilliant.
Yep.
Have you puffed anyone? Yes.
Oh, I thought you'd never ask.
Who did you do?
R.W.R. McDonald, who wrote the Nancys.
Who wrote the Nancys.
Got in contact with me. I think it was in January this year.
So he contacted you direct?
He contacted me direct, which was very, very sweet of him.
Yes.
I was very flattered.
Yes. Delightful. And you puffed it.
Yes.
How did you find the experience?
Well, I actually would have spoken to you about it at the time because I sort of wasn't sure, like, how would you approach, what would you write? I mean, that sounds like a simple question, but I think I wrote more of a blurb than a...
Yes.
I think more what you're meant to write is like... almost like a review.
Yeah, and it depends, doesn't it? Because sometimes you see people's puffs and they're quite a paragraph and they're used on promotional materials, like things that we get sent, for instance, here at the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, we get a big paragraph about the book and its themes and how important it is by a well-established author.
Yep.
And then sometimes if the book that I just finished, Alice Bishop's A Constant Hum, which is just...
Oh, my God, that's everywhere.
It's extraordinary. And Tony Birch has done the puff, and it is literally just remarkable, a writer of the highest quality.
Yep.
Now, if you've got a line like that, that's all you need.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it depends to, I suppose,
where they're thinking of putting your name. Well, you do try and put in things that you then think... quotable quotes. Okay.
What did you say? Can you read out your puff?
Can you just have... Robbie's going to hate this. Have a look.
Okay.
At the book.
But you're not.
Kate's looking at the front.
I can't, I'm just trying to see because I can see Paddy O'Reilly's puff and I can see Tony Jordan's puff, but I can't see yours, Catherine. I don't know. Where's yours? Oh, yours is on the inside. Yours is on the inside and yours is a whole two paragraphs.
Okay, so if you were to have a hierarchy in which you, like the placement of puff quotes, where would you...
Okay, so you haven't made it to the cover, right? You also wrote an essay about it though, so maybe they just needed more space. Catherine's, so everyone needs to go out and buy the Nancy's, obviously, but also then you can open up the book and read Catherine's puff, which goes for the entire inside cover. She does also... How did he feel about you calling his book completely bizarre?
In the best of ways.
That's true. In the very best of ways.
I did say that to you afterwards. I remember. I was like, I hope he took bizarre in the spirit that it was intended.
I love it.
I think it counts.
I think it totally counts. I love that. So when you are next approached to do a puff for someone,
I would approach.
What are you going to do differently?
I might be a little more succinct in my response. I think, I mean, if you read what I did write, it is much more, this is a story about this and this is what happens.
Which is also really helpful for readers.
But that's the classic thing I think that people talk about now with reviews, that so many reviews summarize a story.
Yeah.
Whereas I think now I would be much more like, this is a wonderful book. It made me feel this way.
Yeah, right.
I couldn't wait to finish it. More that style of.
Nice.
I was obsessed, that kind of.
Yeah. Thing. Also, first time.
Yeah.
This was your first time puff, so that's okay. I actually, it's funny that you say that he contacted you directly because I have already been asked by my new publisher to start making a list of people who might endorse the book and that I will contact them. You know, it really would be best for me to contact them directly.
Oh.
Like, I am
so
nervous.
I suppose that's some more... people who were wavering, maybe. Well, I suppose it makes
maybe,
them, I
and
know.
You know, like a personal kind of request. But
not that they would waver.
I'm terrified. A, what if they say no straight up? Which is fine.
No, they
which
never
is
would.
Fine. Or B, what if they hate it? Or C, what if they feel obliged and then they write like an obligy endorsement? Which, like, everyone knows what an obligy endorsement looks like, right? I'm really nervous about it, but you know, hopefully I'll update you.
That's. Like,
if you'd like to puff my new book.
Weird endorsements. I once read this travel book, and on the front it said this something about for anyone who thinks travel books should be funny, or something like that. But however you interpreted it that, however the wording was, that it meant that the book would be funny.
Yep.
So I bought the book, but the book is not funny. Like not a funny book at all. And so it was a really misleading.
Yeah, and then you have to rethink what they were doing and whether they were just being awful.
So who are you going to approach?
Oh, I've got a list in my little black book. But
and
also
you
think about those people.
Via Twitter or something.
Yeah, maybe. And, you know, we've got lots of delightful contacts here that that we've made through the first time podcast. I think that's the other thing. First time around, I knew nobody. There was no one that I would have asked. Second time around, I know heaps more people in the writing world. There's heaps of people I'd like to ask. There's also that awkward thing, which is, when is someone too much your friend? I don't think I could puff your book. Yeah. You couldn't puff mine.
Yeah.
We couldn't ask other people in our writing group. I don't think because...
Yeah, it's too kind of...
Well, not even that, but also anyone who knows anyone knows that whatever you say on my cover, delightful as it may be.
I'm very good at first pages, though, if you want someone to do a really long blurb.
Who would dream world, right? Imagine dream world, blue sky thinking for your next book. Who would you want to puff it? Like anywhere in the world.
Which is really a question of like what writers do you most admire anyways. I would do Love Child of... Miranda July, John Irving, Tom Robbins.
Imagine if
I would buy that book.
I would totally buy that book. I also think that you have that thing where you go, okay, so, you know, I would love
it has to be in the same genre.
Has to be same genre, but also in this, the new world of social media and the rest of it, like I would really like, for instance, Anne Enright, right? That would be amazing if Anne Enright said something lovely about my book. I also want Zoe Foster-Blake to put it on her Instagram.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, let's be smart about this, right?
Well, we've even learned a lot of that through the podcast.
We totally have. We've learned so much of this stuff. And still, my friends who are very clever in this area, Shay Gardner, I'm looking at you, tell me, like, we're not even a quarter of the way there to learning how to make it work. Tune in and we'll tell you all that we learn about the gram and puff quotes.
Rob McDonald is a Kiwi living in Melbourne with his two daughters and an extended family of two baby mamas, an estranged cat, Flower, and Stevie Nicks the chicken. Rob attended Faber Academy's Writing a Novel Stage 1 and Stage 2, and an excerpt of The Nancys was published in the Faber Writing Academy Writing a Novel anthology. Rob realised while studying journalism that writing fiction rather than reporting facts was his true bent. The Nancys was highly commended for an unpublished manuscript in the 2017 Victorian Premier's Literary Awards.
Welcome, Rob.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So The Nancys is your first novel. Can you start by telling us a little bit about how and why you started writing it?
Sure. So it actually started in 2006. I had done a script writing course, which was like a 6-month online script writing course. And I'd done two first drafts, which it was really just practicing story. One was a horror.
Funny horror or?
Well, I enjoyed it. It was sort of a reality show where the contestants didn't realize they were a laboratory experiment for like an Ebola type virus. And the second,
I like it already.
And the second one was a fantasy. It was around a knight and a Viking love story, and there was curses and all kinds of things.
There was curses? Curses. Sorry. I was thinking of a key on a keyboard. Like a cursor mouse.
I'm sure there might have been something in there. for my next story, I wanted to try a whodunit because I'd always loved murder mysteries and, you know, that sort of reading along, solving the puzzle. And when I came up with The Nancys, I realized it was bigger than one story. So it's sort of the idea I saw was going to be a trilogy, and that's why I thought I'll try writing this as a novel because it was going to span several stories. I guess there was going to be a much larger story arc. So that was 2006.
So does that mean you plotted? Like, did you go to the extent of plotting, or it was more just a sense of this will happen, then this, that's the three?
Yeah, so I'm a complete pantser.
Yeah.
So it was that by this stage I sort of discovered it was about a child, and that child was Tippy, and she had her babysitting uncle and his boyfriend, and together they were the Nancys. And it's actually Tippi's story. She's the protagonist, and there's a much larger story. And where it ends, Tippi needs to go through several stages, and it was just way too much to cram into one book. Plus, I needed the I needed Tippi to be able to grow and develop, and for the Nancys to have the set of skills they're going to require by book three, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't be possible in the time frame unless I abridged everything, and then that was a story I wasn't interested in reading or writing. So,
So how, like, what was the process of starting writing?
Yeah, sure. So my whole life I had, like, I've always loved writing and writing stories, but I always did it for myself. And once I left school, you know, I'd have a notebook or I'd write snatches or short stories. The furthest I'd got prior to doing the film scripts was like a novella. And life always got in the way. And my writing was always the first thing that dropped off. I never prioritized it. So come end of 2015, and I had completed a master's, so I'd done postgraduate study, and so I'd carved out this time between family, I have two daughters, and my work life in international education. So I didn't want to lose that, so I thought, okay, I'll prioritize my writing and give that a, you know, red hot go. And yeah, and that's how it
sort of
happened.
What was the time? Was it like a couple of big spurts or a little spurts?
So it was, do you mean like the, when
yeah,
I
like
started writing it?
Like what time
yeah,
did you
sure.
have you?
So I did a writing course, Faber Academy, and I had a weekly word count that I would, that I'd set for myself. So it was 5,000 words. I can't.
A week?
5,000 words a week.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, Well, it's so I can't do the, I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. and write for 1 hour.
Yeah.
I'm not disciplined like that. And it would just set me up for failure. It'd be like dieting or going to the gym or something. But where I've got a goal over a week, then on public transport, lunch times, at night.
When I could never work on public transport.
It's actually not too bad once you get used to it.
Do you think people, like, do you feel observed on the screen?
Look, I can only do it if I've got a decent enough journey.
Yeah.
Or I'm doing it on my phone and notes.
We are the exact opposite.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so Faber is how you got to produce a first manuscript?
Yes. Yeah, look, I had tried NaNoWriMo.
Oh, yeah.
I tried that a couple of times, and I could get to a certain, say, 10,000 words, and then I just didn't know what to do or what I was doing or where the story was going, or I needed help. I really did. And the interesting thing with Faber was, it gave me those skills. And that's where I did write the first draft over a year.
And that's the structure of the course, is it, that you will produce?
So, yes. So you've got writing a novel part one, which is 3 months. So it's a Tuesday night and then a couple of Saturday during the day. And then you've got part two, which again is 3 months. So I'm, even though I was doing 5,000 words, you know, you're going over scenes and, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm a relatively slow writer maybe. I don't know. It just takes as long as it takes. But, I had classmates who were much quicker and were getting drafts done, and I'm still plodding along. But, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the writing process, I think.
And did you form a writer's group or anything out of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So our class, which is the Melbourne 2016 Faber Academy, Yeah, we're still all in contact. You know, we workshop and catch up for Christmas. And
have you seen a lot of people have had books like?
So from my class, Catherine Kovacic, so she's had two books out now. So she was working on Portrait of Molly Dean.
Yeah, which sounds wonderful. I was on a panel at Brunswick Bound. I did an event with her. It sounds like a fabulous book artist. Yeah. Her background's artist.
Yeah. So she's a very close writing brand.
Oh, wonderful. Now, the Nancys, so that was 2016. Mm-hmm. In 2017, the Nancys did very well in the Unpublished Manuscript Awards run by the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about? I mean, obviously, logistically quite simple, but did you always have that in mind?
No, well, yeah. So part of the advice we got at Faber Academy was to enter a published manuscript awards. And so Tony Jordan and Paddy O'Reilly were my teachers there. And they just the idea that you've got a deadline to work towards to get your manuscript polished. And, you know, I work quite well with external deadlines or say even with Faber. We had to weekly say what our word count was. So almost you didn't want that Weight Watchers moment. Yep. So, you know, it really pushed me along.
About Weight Watchers recently, yeah. Saying they used to have a piggy mask that the person
No.
Isn't that awful?
Really?
Yes, if you weighed over what you're
Wow.
I don't think they have the piggy mask anymore. But anyway.
That has gotta go and we could use that somewhere. Wow.
So you go around and say, this is my goal and I achieved mine.
And then people go, shame. No. But it was good. It was good. Well, it was great motivation when you're sort of sitting there going, oh, should I watch another episode? Mm. Like, no, actually, I need to do some writing. So I'd entered a couple. So I'd entered the Bath and KYD. But looking back on it, I entered KYD with my second draft. I'm kind of horrified, but, once I'd done my first draft, I was like, woohoo.
Yes,
yeah,
I know that feeling.
Done.
Totally.
Yeah, send it off. Finished. Yeah. I'm on to the next. And, so by the time it came to the Victorian.
You kind of need that naivety, don't you think?
Oh, you totally do. You totally do. Otherwise, I don't think you'd send it out
you
ever.
No, you wouldn't go the distance.
No. And, because the Nancys ended up 8 drafts.
Wow.
If you'd known that right at the beginning, I mean, Poor. So with the Victorian Premier's Unpublished, I was in the middle of writing the 4th draft where I had been informed that the murderer was someone else, and I didn't realise when I did draft 3, one of my readers from my writing group, Narelle Hill, said, hang on, I think you've got the wrong person. I think it's this person here. And I went back and looked through it. And
it was all set up for a...
Yeah. I was like, oh, no. So so I ended up having to Frankenstein the beginning of draft 4 with the end of draft 3 to make the deadline.
Yeah.
So once I sent it off, I honestly didn't think I would hear. And that's, because... Yeah.
Was it really like it's all happening... in a certain direction and then you've shoved it, or it was a bit cleaner than that?
Well, I think the start of the fourth draft was cleaner because I was having to compress what I'd already written because I was having to rewrite the last third, when they're finding the murderer, all of that. So I think the writing in the fourth one was much better.
Yes.
But, then I had this sort of old bit. So, so that's what I mean. I was surprised when I found out that it was highly commended, very, very happily surprised.
And how did you find out?
So, I was coming back from a work trip, and I'd been upgraded to business class. It was all
this
very...
This is such a good day.
And we've gone from Kathmandu to Singapore. So I'd actually seen Mount Everest from the plane.
Wow.
So, yeah, no, it was pretty amazing. And I landed, turned my phone on, and there was, some messages from my writing group. And then it just happened one of my friends, Nada, rang me and she said, oh, you know, congratulations. And I was like, oh, that's great. And I thought Highly Commended was like...
So you didn't, they didn't send you an email first. It was just announced as part of a public announcement. Is that how that worked?
Yeah. Wow. I'm trying to think. I don't think I'd, or if I'd got the email, it had happened while I was flying.
Yeah.
So Nada rang and... And I thought Highly Commended was everyone gets a gold star, but it actually was three.
No.
She's going, no, this is going to change everything. There was three shortlisted and two of us Highly Commended. I was like, Wow. And then when I read...
That is phenomenal. Well done.
Thank you. And when I read what the judges had said, so I got on the website and then I just like started crying on the plane because it was the first time outside of my writing group and friends and family that someone had read it, didn't have any idea who I was personally.
Yeah.
And it actually got what I was trying to do. And that was huge for me. I was just like, whoa. So, yeah.
What an awesome moment.
Yeah.
And the business class bit is also really
that was good. And seeing Mount Everest.
And so what happened then? Because we hear a lot from people who do well in the Unpublished Manuscripts Awards. And a lot of them say, you know, it is a real turning point
Totally. So what happened then was Grace Heifetz, she was at Curtis Brown then, contacted me and wanted to read it. And it was coming up to the Emerging Writers Festival, so she was coming down for that. So I was just like, what? So I sent her the first half of four, but I didn't want her to read the third bit until I'd finished it. So she read it and she really loved it. And, she was quite patient waiting for the other half while I was desperately trying to get that, thinking, oh no, if I don't get this right, I'm not going to get an agent.
Everything feels so... life or death,
You
reckon? You think this is my one and only chance.
Absolutely.
You sort of have that.
Yeah, you feel like you've got the one shot and if you blow it, it's done. And no luckily, Grace signed me. And then, Grace is one of those agents who can provide editorial feedback or notes.
Yep.
And so that was great. And I really respond well to that. I'm, you know, very keen on that kind of collaboration. And so went back and forth, redrafting until I think it might have been February 2018 was when I went on submission.
And tell us about that process.
That's the worst. It's that
it's
whole...
It's pretty tense.
It is so awful. And the thing is, because I was seeing it as a trilogy, I was wanting to work on the second one, but then you get on blogs and everything and everyone's like, yes, make sure that you just write while you're waiting. But then I'm like, well, I'm writing something that if the first one's not picked up, then... And then I was like, you know what? I've just got to do that. But it, I mean, it really is that email refreshing every 5 minutes or less.
And so how long and how many publishers did you send it to and how long did you have to...
So she sent it to 10 and, you know, they were fantastic. So it was within 4 weeks we had, we were down to the last couple and then sorting that out. But in between that, people were responding and they were great. And, a lot of the responses were, we enjoyed it, but not for our list.
Yeah.
Or we don't see where it will sit on the shelf.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, which I was totally fine with. I was incredibly grateful they had taken the time to read it.
It's a crazy experience.
Yeah, and provide feedback. And also I knew that going in that because it was the story I wanted to write, that it wasn't one that, you know, I used to get asked, where does it, you know, when I was at Faber, or where does it sit on the shelf? What are the two titles in between? Yep. And I just kind of Jasper Jones and The Thin Man, and isn't, you know, it's really nothing.
Well,
like,
it is a book that there is not a lot that's like it in a really positive way. Like, I feel like that young protagonist, it's like you see a little bit of that now, but I hadn't really seen that before the Nancys.
And that's the interesting thing.
Adult novel with young protagonists.
Yeah, and when I was writing, there was quite a bit of feedback I'd get from, you know, people out in the industry is, you know, it's an 11-year-old, but it's for an adult. Mm. Now it's almost like a subgenre. You know, you've got The Yellow House, the Van Affleck Girls
Sheep
are gone.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Nowadays, you just think, what? But at the time, but I think the number one thing is you just got to write the story that you want to write and not try to put that stuff out of your head, really.
Well, it's easy to be discouraged, isn't it?
Yeah, right? Oh, totally. Or think you're doing something wrong because it isn't like, you know, X, Y, and Z. Yeah.
So you get an offer from Allen and Unwin that you was the publisher that you end up going with. Yep. What was the process like from there?
So then it was good. No, it was really good. I was just remembering. So got the structural edit. Ronnie Scott did the structural edit. Actually, while I was waiting on the structural edit, there was another time of, you know, you just
it's the two-speed thing. It's like yesterday or in 6 months.
And I remember the first time podcast started while I was waiting for the structural edit.
Cool.
So this is kind of a meta moment for me. So that was brilliant because I was hearing your journey and listening to you and Kate. So that was really good. And I think Robert Lutkin said he had just gone through and he had written a really great blog piece about when he got his structural edit.
I remember reading that as well, actually, now that you say.
Yeah, so I'm incredibly grateful that I guess my timing was when people like yourselves were sharing all of this information. So I didn't feel like I was going through it alone, and I had some kind of idea of what to expect. Plus, Catherine Kovacic had, you know, she'd just published her book, so she was, you know, so I had someone to talk to about, you know, these feelings and what was going on.
There are so many feelings.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. So then with the structural, so the reason why I was sort of at the beginning going, oh, is it ended up triggering all the self-doubt and self-belief, and that took me completely by surprise. I thought, you know, through Faber and, you know, sort of, it was a journey where I was even claiming the title of writer in 2016. Yep. So by the time it came to the structural, I thought I'd kind of, I've done that. And it didn't. And it was just, I guess, having to sit with all of those feelings of,
it's hard.
Yeah. And for it to happen right then. And I was trying to explain to Jane Palfreyman, my publisher, and I don't know if she quite got it, because it wasn't the structural edit. The structural edit was brilliant. And I was so grateful someone had spent this time, and Ronnie had done such an in-depth, fantastic job with it. But it was actually me getting to the keyboard to write. When I was at the keyboard writing, it was good. It was really good. But, yeah, it's just that whole everything that...
Well, it's a different experience too, because it feels like a much more high pressure environment. Like,
suddenly you can't just sort of close the keyboard and walk away. Like, you know, perhaps that had been part of my writing journey, and I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, up until then, I could always write, you know, little bits and then just leave it.
The decisions have no consequence. Like, there's no, because you can always change it. Always change it later. Whereas once you start getting down to structural edit, you're like, I need to get this right. And particularly in your circumstance, if you're looking at it as a trilogy, it's like everything has a longer term consequence.
Yeah, so I wasn't prepared for that. And yeah, the only way through it was just to sit with it and just keep plugging away, and eventually got out the other end of that. And it was so much better than what it had been. And it's just like, wow, yeah.
And so, small question, Rob McDonald versus RWR McDonald, decisions like that, is there an in-depth analysis of why you'd picked one over the other?
So as a kid, I grew up with C.S. Lewis, J.R. Tolkien. So if I was going to be an author, I'd want to publish under that. I also like the idea of it being, I guess, I don't think non-binary is the right word, but do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I wanted to take myself out of the equation for the reader. Like, there's a photo of me in the back, so I'm not pretending to be one thing or the other.
Yeah.
But I also like that idea. I just want them to jump in and get into Tippi and her world and not be thinking, what's this dude doing writing this book? And then the other side of it is online. So there are, I've got a good Scottish name. There's probably about 20 million Robert McDonalds in the world. So, but yeah, RWR McDonald, isn't. So it is actually my initials, and I'm not doing
that. You would have to think about that, though, with more common surnames. Yeah. We were just talking, we did the Mark Smith interview, with Mark Smith today, and he had... That's an issue.
Yeah. So it was all of those kind of factors. But also, I always wanted to. And it is actually my name. So, which is a bonus.
It's not a selection.
AJ Finn.
And so the name The Nancys was always going to be The Nancys?
Well,
it's a great name.
No. So it was the name of the group. But as the title... no, it was actually Jean in my writing group, and she would just refer to it as The Nancys. And it was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice, very nice title.
So we have her to thank for the title.
And so when it's August now, the book came out in June.
Yep.
What have the last couple of months been like? What have the highlights been?
Look, there's so many. It's such a... privilege and joy. Like, it really is amazing. All the first, so your first review.
Do you read the reviews? Are you a reviewer? Are you?
I have to. I stay away from the Goodreads reviews.
Yeah.
I keep an eye on it. And unless, it's someone that shares it with me. But, there's a lot of book bloggers that use Instagram and reviews. And if they've tagged me in it, I'll see it. And there were some wise people that said about DMing reviewers.
That was a very good question. So Rob had asked the question we didn't reveal.
No, this is if we can reveal it.
Surprise, Rob was one of our question askers.
Yeah.
But you asked the appropriate response, which I just like it. But then Kate was like, no, it's perfectly acceptable to DM them, and it's a really nice thing to do.
Yeah, I think they've gone to, they've read it and they're putting it out
it's
there.
It's a very generous thing from
to have done. Absolutely. And then these amazing things like readings. It was their crime book of the month, and Better Read Than Dead. It was their June book of the month. Like, all these amazing things. You just don't even, wasn't even on my radar that could
Such
happen.
Generosity
so,
around.
Yeah, so absolutely. Absolutely. They were all fantastic. And then also just the support from friends and family. And
Is there anything that's been challenging or maybe you weren't prepared for?
Well, I think that, so my dad got sick two months before publication date, And so it was more life. And I guess, it, you know, you've got your book coming up and you just think that's what's going to be the main focus of your life. And then to have another major event go on at the same time was really super challenging. But like I said before, I think the thing was to stay present. Like, Dad was super proud of all the book achievements, and it was to celebrate and try and be in the moment and the joy that the book has brought. Yeah, so I'd say non-book related was definitely the challenge. But in terms of book, no, because I mean, I'm happy, more than happy to go out and, you know, meet booksellers and, you know, talk to readers. I mean, I love it. So
I'm really sorry to hear about your dad.
Yeah, you too.
We've spoken about it.
Yeah.
And did you do a tour of bookshops and things when the book came out?
Yeah, we did a mini tour. So in Melbourne and Sydney and Dunedin, New Zealand. And
I feel like that constitutes an international
tour. Yeah. Absolutely. Overseas. So that was great. And then I did some events as well. So did a In Conversation at Better Read Than Dead with Bree Lee, which was...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And then like a conversation with Serena Gale at the Sun Bookshop. Amazing. And
Now, you are great on social media. So were you on social media before you became an author? Before you were writing?
I used to be on Facebook a long time ago and then I disappeared. So I was a bit of a social media hermit, except for LinkedIn, which was for my international ed. So actually it was in 2016 that I saw, you know, that you need to be on at least Twitter or some kind of social platform as a writer. So I actually went through the Australian Writers' Centre and they had an online program, Build Your Author Platform.
Yep.
And that was fantastic. I really recommend that. So I went through that and,
And what sorts of things did that talk to?
Oh, it goes through everything from Twitter to Insta to Facebook to, you know, whether to blog or not blog, newsletters. Oh, it's an excellent resource, really, really good. So I actually started up my Twitter and Insta based on that and just sort of slowly not... I liked... I heard you one time say about lurking and so tried not to be a lurker, but also just sort of sat back a lot and just, you know, slowly built up community, I think. I never really wanted to just jump out and, you know, buy followers and do all that kind of thing. I'd rather know who's
the following thing sounds very odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, is it still a thing? I don't know.
I just remember I was watching there's $1 million houses in New York or something.
Yeah.
And they have these three real estate agents and one of them was accusing the other of buying followers because they were sort of posting things that no one was commenting. And it sort of, it was embarrassing. The conversation was embarrassing. Like, it was embarrassing to be accused of.
Yeah.
So, Rob, how do you fit writing in now?
Look, it is still... So I'm still working full-time with international education. My employer, so it's Deakin University, have been so fantastic with the book coming out and really super supportive. So it's still, you know, snatching those moments. So... lunchtime, PT, night, weekends. It's ultimately not going to be sustainable. And I kind of realize that now having one book out in the world. So, I just have to keep on. At this stage, I've still got, book two isn't contracted yet. So, you know, fingers crossed, can at least, find some time somewhere.
Is it nice coming back to the characters?
Yes. Yeah, it's a world I really, really enjoy spending time in, and I love the characters. Because they were in my head for 10 years before I even started writing, really. So from 2006 to 2016, they've been around a long time for me. Yeah. And I just have that kind of drive or compulsion to get Tippy's story done. Because it's almost like I don't feel like she'll be able to rest until it's all out and on the page. And then, yeah, I if I can think far enough ahead, it would freak me out about what I would do after the next two. So it's kind of comforting in a way also, just to, you know I've got a bit of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Advice for debut authors.
Ooh.
Do you have any?
I think... enjoy it and being in the moment when it is happening, because it is so overwhelming and, you know, exciting and nerve-wracking, and, you know, you can go down a million different rabbit holes. And I think the other advice would be to be active in your book's life. And by that, I mean, I wanted, like my publisher was incredibly supportive and they've done a fantastic job with, you know, publicity. But for me to be able to, I guess, rest at night, I wanted to do as much as I could to give it the best launch, you know, the best chance in the world. And then at some stage you have to... Well, you've got to hand it over, don't you? I mean, you don't have control. Someone's going to buy it if they're going to buy it and read it, if they're going to recommend it. But for me, it was important that I would be able to say to myself, okay, I gave it the best shot I could. You know, good luck.
That's good advice. That's it. Thanks, Rob, for sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
R.W.R. MacDonald, for your first time, agented or unagented?
Agented.
Advance or no advance?
Advance.
Overseas territories or just ANZ?
ANZ.
Festival invites or no festival invites?
No festival invites.
Do you know how many books you've sold?
I don't actually. I'm going to find out end of this month.
Oh, what month is it? August.
August. So it'll be 3 months by then.
And lastly, favourite novel by a debut author?
Portrait of Molly Dean by Catherine Kovacic.
That is on my list.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast, a podcast about the first and second time you publish a book. We recorded this episode at RMIT University on the traditional land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This podcast is produced by Phoebe Ady. The First Time Podcast is supported by Writers Victoria, ACT Writers Centre, RMIT School of Media and Communication, and by our wonderful supporters on Patreon. You too can become a supporter of our podcast by heading to our Patreon site, www.patreon.com/thefirsttimepodcast.